Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Hello and welcome in to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Hoppin, joined as always by my co-host Andrew Mackins and our producer Garner. We've also got Crosby in the room again tonight, so sorry if you hear his cuteness throughout the show. But fellas, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm excited to plant our flag on some guys and as you said, stake our reputation against them for 2020.
Oh yeah. We are talking my guys for the 2020 season. We're each going to give a quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end that, as Andrews pointed out, are staking our claim and reputation on, because if they falter in 2020, then we are going to quit. I'm just kidding. That's not going to happen. But we've got our takes ready to go. Garner, how are you tonight?
I am doing fantastic. I am slightly distracted by playoff hockey, but I am ready to go.
Good stuff. I love it. Well, as always, we'll start the show with our kickoff question, do our mental health minute, and then get into the my guys. So without further ado, let's kick things off.
And this game is underway.
Okay, so we are nearing the heaviest time of the year for drafts. So our kickoff question is a simple one, because a lot of leagues have give owners the option to choose what draft slot they have. And our kickoff question today is basically, if you had a choice, which draft position would you choose to draft from this year? And let's assume it's a 12-team league. Andrew, I'll let you start things.
Do you have any guesses what I'm going to say, Sam?
Part of me thinks like the four. Nine.
That's not a bad guess. And I have seen more success in the past in the nine slot, but I made it a little more generalized. I say anywhere in the turn, so like 12 or one. Like, obviously, it's easy to say the first pick overall, but you know, if you're in those first four, last four picks, the closer you are to the turn, the better for me. I think it's easier to allow the draft to come to you that way. You don't have to overthink value or like, which guy can I grab now and hope that the other guy I want comes back to me. If you have the 12th pick or the first pick, you just grab two guys at once in quick succession, and then you reevaluate when the draft comes back to you.
Yeah, I'm a little bit in the same boat. I usually prefer like the three or four if I'm drafting towards the start, or the nine or 10. I don't really like being totally on the turn, because you are forced to reach on some guys, the potentially my guys that you have, because there's so much time between each of your picks that you either need to grab someone ahead of their ADP or let them fall to someone else. I think the nine or 10 spot, I think is really interesting if you're going to go RB heavy early, because you can ideally get two of the top 10 or 12 running backs and then just sort of load up on wide receiver thereafter. So if I had to choose one, it'd be either the four or probably the 10 spot. Garner, do you have any other opinions?
Nothing different. I'm pretty much just going to mirror what you said there, and that similar to both guys, I like being near the turn, but like you, I don't want to be right on it. I like to space out a little bit, make it so that I'm not reaching the full like 24 picks essentially, and try and cut that down a little bit. But being at the like 9 or 10, you still have a quick enough turn where you can try and plan out your two picks. It's not going to always go how you want, but you have a better idea.
Right on. Well, I think the takeaway here is avoid the middle of the draft. That is the dead zone. So let's get into our mental health minutes. There's been some bad news overshadowing the world. Obviously, a lot of college football conferences have delayed their season for the spring. There's just some not very good numbers coming out on the coronavirus. So let's spin things positive and focus on the good. So I want to ask each of you guys, what's something positive going on in your life right now? I think Garner, you teased it a little bit a couple minutes ago, so I have a feeling I know which way you're going here.
Absolutely. The best thing for me right now is playoff hockey. I mean, even if you're not a big hockey fan in general, playoff hockey is just a different level intensity. And right now, I'm watching the Columbus-Tampa Bay game. It is in the fifth overtime, one of the longest games in NHL history. And it's sudden death. So, I mean, you're always on the edge of your seat when the puck goes anywhere near the net. And it's just so fun and exciting.
That's awesome. I agree with you that NHL playoff hockey is one of the best sports to watch. I don't get into the regular season for hockey as much just because, like NBA or MLB, there are so many games. So it's not a single game doesn't matter quite as much. But once you get into the playoffs, those guys, the talent of those guys is on an elite level. And it almost looks like I watch some football and, you know, baseball and things like that. And I'm like, oh, I can make that throw or I could, you know, that basket. But I can never do anything that those hockey players are doing. But Andrew, what's some positive things going on in your life?
Yeah, I like that you brought this, you know, prompt up, just being able to reflect on a long quarantine. It's been longer than we've all expected, and take out, you know, what are the good things that have happened, being grateful for, you know, things like the fact that none of us have gotten COVID yet. So that's a positive. For me personally, I've gained a lot of experience this summer, being an editor for the Undroppables and, you know, put in a lot of time into that. I'm excited that we actually got the undroppables.com as our new URL, and we redesigned the site, or a lot of the design work was, in fact, I would assume 99% of the design work was done by @101chalk. So shout out to him, the founder, for putting that together, securing the URL for us. So that's exciting. And we're pretty much releasing content every day now. So, I'm excited about that and moving forward with that as well. And, I know you guys, I've talked to you guys a little bit about this, but on top of that, today I received in the real world a job offer. So I think that that's something, you know, I'm excited for as well.
Huzzah!
Gonna be
nice. Congrats.
For all intents and purposes, accepting that. Hard to turn that down in a pandemic, right? So
that is amazing. I love it. That makes me so happy. Congratulations. So
thank you.
Breaking news on the Product and Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. Andrew Mackins is officially off the free agent market. He is back in business.
I figured you guys would appreciate that because, you know, I've been looking for jobs and whatnot. So figured I'd surprise you live on camera.
Wow, that is exceptional news to hear. I know a lot of people have been hit by COVID in the job market, specifically losing their jobs or being furloughed, stuff like that. So it's always great to hear a friend getting back into it. For me, the positive thing going on in my life, I think several of our listeners might know that I started grad school a couple weeks ago. So just now finally getting into the swing of things. Midterm one went pretty well and excited to continue that. It's been a little bit more work than I think I anticipated, but we're making do. It's all in the name of getting some better fantasy football analysis out there because it is in the master's is in data science. So hoping to translate that into some actionable fantasy football content. So this is all great news. We got playoff hockey. We got new jobs. We got new schools. So it's a good time on the PAT Fantasy Football Podcast tonight, and we're going to keep the good times rolling. We're going to talk right now about my guys. These are the guys that Andrew and I are staking our entire reputation. The 20 years of fantasy football that we've done comes down to these four players. It is one quarterback, one running back, one wide receiver, and one tight end, and I'm sure nobody will come after our jobs after this. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I'd love to do a charity bet with you on which of these grouping of four actually scores more fantasy points by the end of the season. I think that'd be pretty nuts, but maybe I pick some guys that are higher in the ADP, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But well, you guys will see what we're talking about as we get into it and how that might not be a fair bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. Maybe we can figure something out before the season starts, but let's start with quarterback. You have a guy that I was actually shocked to see in our show notes. So I'm going to let you take this one first, because I think it is a bold claim to tie yourself to this person for fantasy football in 2020.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to say to start, and we talk about quarterbacks a lot, and we generally go late round QB. And you in a sense, I feel like you took mine because I saw him on the list already. And I'm like, well, I got to go somewhere else. But I am still fine with staking my claim on Daniel Jones as a my guy this year. No swag is good swag sometimes. And, you know, you look at what he did last year, and I think there is a lot of promise. I mean, if you are going late round QB, looking at him as a potential guy who could make that second year leap. As a rookie, his 16-game pace for games that he actually had a full complement of pass attempts in, he was over 600 attempts, over 4,000 passing yards, and 32 touchdowns in the air. He has a decent rushing floor, which we look at a little bit more nowadays when we see guys like Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray running with the ball. And so those are some things that excites me, along with the fact that a lot of people have brought up that, you know, between Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, and his receiving core, they never had all of those guys healthy at once. So, you know, clean slate week one, I think that Daniel Jones with his 10th round ADP is someone that you can potentially get excited about. I mean, most likely scenario, he's like Jameis Winston, and he gets you a lot of fantasy points, but you're pissed about all the turnovers that he has along the way.
The turnovers is obviously the biggest thing against him, with not necessarily the interceptions, but the number of fumbles he had last year. It's certainly, again, like I said, it's a bit bold to be thinking of him as a my guy. I don't hate it. I pumped it up a little bit before you said your piece. I like it a little bit. We talked on our NFC East preview a couple weeks ago about the early season schedule for him, and a lot of analysts are shying away from him because of it, because they face Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and a couple other tough defenses at the start. But I don't necessarily think that he's a bad pick because of that. So I don't hate it, I don't love it, but I guess that's where we differ.
Well, I know you love your guy, and I like him too, so I'm excited to hear you stump speech for your quarterback.
No doubt. And that's Jared Goff. I was kind of expecting you to take him too. I wouldn't have hated if we both had the same guy, so maybe we'll call him guy.
I figured we each should pick a unique guy, so that's why I went the other way. And okay. And we've talked before about how we, at least for me, I kind of have Goff and Jones in the same tier. So anyway. Please speak for us.
So we've talked before about how he had a 3.5% touchdown rate last year, which is well below his 4.7% career touchdown rate. And if all of his pass catchers in Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Tyler Higbee are being drafted inside the top 100, then why isn't he? Like, I think it's really just the biggest gap in quarterback versus receiver assets in fantasy football, that if we've got so much confidence in Woods, Kupp, and Higbee to perform well, that Goff is going to be the one throwing them the ball. I think Sean McVay is certainly competent enough. They were figuring it out towards the end of the season. Goff had a couple games with a bad stretch early in the middle of the season last year, so he certainly has a floor, but I think the Rams are as likely as anyone to lead the league in pass attempts, and they could rely on the passing game more with Gurley gone and a defense that has, while it has one of the best, if not the best, defensive player in the league on it, has proven to give up points, which will give Goff an opportunity to sling the ball. I think he's just in a really great opportunity. People are discounting him quite a bit, but not giving his pass catchers the same discount. And Jared Goff stacking him with one or two of Woods, Kupp, and Higbee, I think is a great move to make in fantasy football this season.
Yeah, I love that. And it's crazy looking at it that, you know, Goff actually is like two rounds later in fantasy football calculator ADP than Daniel Jones right now. So I would probably be targeting Goff as well, because I mean, the reason I bring up Jones is a guy who's in the late rounds that you can target and get a lot of value from. But if you can get even more value from Goff, then why not?
You got it. You got it. So let's go to the running back. My guy is someone I knew you would have nowhere near your list. This is a guy that I have pumped up several times already this offseason. It's Keyshawn Vaughn, the running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And there's been some heat on him the past couple of weeks because Bruce Arians is coming out and saying that Ronald Jones is the guy in the backfield. But don't forget that just 3 months ago after the draft, Bruce Arians was quoted as saying Vaughn is a guy that can play every down. So Graham Barfield earlier today actually posted a couple snapshots of some things that Bruce Arians has said in the past regarding his running backs, and basically just makes it out that Bruce Arians is a liar when it comes to how he's going to split his backfield touches. And Ronald Jones was barely able to beat out Peyton Barber last year. The LeSean McCoy addition certainly doesn't help Vaughn, but I'm not any more scared of him getting fewer touches than with LeSean McCoy off the team. And for all these people who are touting Dare Ogunbowale, whatever, like,
please, I think the Dare talk's all in good fun, but hey, maybe Bruce Arians never drank paint either. Like, we hear those stories that he used to, you know, drink paint when he was a kid, but I don't know what to believe with this guy. I obviously sit on the opposite end of this debate, but I appreciate your, you know, staunch defense of Vaughn.
The best part was a couple months ago, I was having to draft him in like the sixth round, and now I can get him in the 10th, 11th round of drafts because there has been so much negativity around him, and not necessarily negativity around him, but positivity, I guess, for Ronald Jones. And
yeah, it's all about the perception. And that's the tough thing with me for Ronald Jones too, is because when you drafted him before, you were getting him at, you know, his floor, like at a discount, and now you're drafting him at like closer to his ceiling, which makes it tougher to make the pick.
Let's move on to your running back, my guy.
Yeah. So this, my guy, I've talked about a lot as well. And I know before the podcast, we were talking a little bit like, oh, should I pick someone else? We've been talking about this guy too much, but I gave it some thought and I'm sticking to it. It's Miles Sanders. This is my guy at the running back position. Last year, he had 1,300 total yards and 50 receptions on not even a full complement of workload throughout the season. I think there were some games where he just was absolutely missing. And this year, I am, you know, standing by the fact that Peterson, even though Boston Scott will take some work away from him and Peterson likes using more than one back, I think he'll get enough work in that offense behind that Philadelphia Eagles line to be super efficient and be a great asset in the early rounds from the running back spot, especially from a pass catching standpoint as well. We love that.
Sanders is certainly a guy that we just have a difference in opinion on. I think Boston Scott will play enough of a role that Sanders isn't going to be the workhorse running back that people expect him to be. I understand the excitement around him. I wouldn't be scared to draft him towards the beginning of the second round, but I'm certainly not targeting him or overdrafting him as much as I've seen some other people take him. I mean, I've seen some people take him in fifth or sixth overall, which I think is a little bit more than I'd be willing to invest in him. But
Yeah, and I understand that. I know with him being a high round pick, it's tougher to invest on it. But I'll say, just to put it in the context for me, like, I've been looking at this keeper draft that I'm in for PPR, and I know we talk half PPR a lot, but there's a few guys who have been kept. So I'm at like the seventh pick, and I'm pretty much between like Miles Sanders, and I'm probably going to take him over Joe Mixon in that draft. So that's where I'm at with him in my rankings. Guys like, you know, Drake Eckler, Dalvin Cook are all being kept. So that's got to be like the one place that I know I'm going to be reaching on him a little to stake my claim.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, I don't hate Sanders over Mixon. All of those guys in that tier have their fair share of question marks, which is why they're being drafted in that range. So moving on to some bona fide actual stud pass catchers, we've got the wide receiver position first. And my guy is the guy who I actually answered our kickoff question to last week about who I'm rising on a bit. And that's Terry McLaurin. I said last week that I don't see a world in which he doesn't get 140 or 150 targets, which would have been top five in the league last year. I mean, outside of Davante Adams and maybe Michael Thomas, he might be the best candidate to lead the league in targets. He has no competition outside of Steven Sims and Antonio Gibson, who aren't really competition at this point. There's obviously the shower narrative with him and Dwayne Haskins. We've talked a lot about continuity, and he has that continuity on offense with Haskins returning as the quarterback. I don't believe these whispers that Alex Smith has a chance to start over Haskins. I think it's just a little bit of friendly nudge or pushing of Haskins to say, hey, like, your spot's not guaranteed as the starter, and trying to incite a little bit of competition. But I think Haskins ends up being the starter and is going to be thrown to Terry McLaurin 10 plus times a game.
Yeah, I really like that pick. Like we said, his ADP makes it seem like a steal for how much volume he should get. So I love that. I don't love it nearly as much as another wide receiver who I've been talking about constantly and is at a higher ADP than McLaurin, but DJ Moore, you've heard his name countless times on this podcast. He is, out of these four, the one I am still the most confident in going into this season. Get this. So Michael Thomas, his second year in the NFL, he finished his 16-game season with 104 receptions, 1,245 yards, and 5 touchdowns. DJ Moore only played 14 full games this year, but if you take that, you know, 16-game pace, he was going for 98 receptions, 1,324 yards, and 5 touchdowns. DJ Moore is younger than Michael Thomas. He's only going to be 23 years old going into this season. He had that 16-game pace with fucking Kyle Allen as his quarterback, which I know everyone brings up with DJ Moore, but Teddy Bridgewater showed he had a connection with Michael Thomas last season. Those guys are going to be able to connect a lot more often in Joe Brady from LSU, his prolific offense. And another little nugget, like, I love these little things. I don't think they have a ton to do with fantasy, but head coach Matt Rhule for the Panthers offered DJ Moore a scholarship when he was coaching at Temple and DJ Moore went to Maryland. So this is coming full circle. The stars are aligned for this breakout to happen. And I honestly couldn't be more excited about it.
That is a nugget of all nuggets, if I've ever heard one, because you don't see stuff like that coming first full circle that often.
It's definitely a bit of a, like, a training camp trope. And I just saw an article that they expect more out of him this year, even after he, you know, played great last season.
Huh. Interesting. I never would have thought that a team would be expecting more out of a player, but, you know, they say what they say.
It was like, you can expect more out of Michael Thomas after what he did last year.
Well, you can expect more out of DJ. Am I right?
Exactly.
So let's wrap this up with our tight end, my guys. Andrew, I'm going to let you finish this one off first.
All right. I know I've talked about this guy a lot as well. And this would not be pot after touchdown if I didn't stump speech for a Tennessee Titan. And this time it's Jonnu Smith.
He's got the Titans hat on.
I do have the Titans hat on right now. I think he has, you know, amazing yards after catch ability. We've already talked about the other options on this passing offense and how, you know, Corey Davis, who, like, at this point, I think Jonnu Smith is the second best receiving option on the team. I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited to read Kyle Yates from Fantasy Pros wrote why Jonnu Smith would be a top six tight end this season. So he's done some projections that are confirmation bias for my take. And I think the biggest thing here, which we can get into with your my guy as well, is in the entire like debate of, well, who's the next breakout tight end? We're trying to find the next Mark Andrews, the next Darren Waller. How much are you investing in that person to end up coming short behind George Kittle and Travis Kelce? And what are those numbers going to look like? Because we always talk about tight end being deep, but then the numbers come up and you could be like a top 10 tight end, but your numbers still pale in comparison to the top two guys. So I'm looking at this as a kind of a value-based target as well, because Jonnu Smith's ADP is still in the 12th round. There are other guys that I like in the late rounds to target as well. I even like your my guy for this, but from a value perspective, I think Jonnu Smith can do just as much for a greater price.
Without a doubt, Jonnu Smith is one of those guys where if I'm really going to wait on tight end, he's one of the first tight ends that I'm eyeing in the double-digit rounds. I think along with probably him, Gesicki, and TJ Hockenson, all of those names are sort of in the same tier for me. But one guy that I've got a shade of a tier ahead of is Hayden Hurst. And I was thinking about putting Calvin Ridley in my wide receiver, my guy slot, but I wanted to spotlight Hurst. And I know people would have come after me saying, you can't expect so many pass catchers in one offense on a list of my guys. Like it would have been too many mouths to feed, but screw the analytics. This offense has a ton of opportunities to thrive. They have the most vacated targets in the league and the most green zone targets available, which is where tight ends usually thrive. We've heard this offseason, which again, may be a trope, of how Matt Ryan has said how much of an athletic freak he thinks Hurst is. And he's been thrown to Julio Jones, one of the foremost experts in being an athletic freak, for the past several years. So if he's saying that about Hayden Hurst, I don't think they give up as much as they did in that trade to let him not fill in into that Austin Hooper role. Even if it's 80% of that, I think he has the ability to easily finish as a top eight tight end. I think he's got the ability to have several major boom games, because if the Rams, who I talked about earlier, don't lead the league in pass attempts, then I think the Falcons could be very close behind them. I know both of them were up there last year. I don't think the Falcons did enough this offseason to make their defense much better, even though they were a little bit improved down the stretch last year. But I'm really excited about Hayden Hurst. I'm willing to take him in the eighth, ninth round. I think just right after those sort of fifth or sixth round guys like Evan Ingram, Hunter Henry, I think he has as much upside as any of those guys. And again, you're getting him at a 1-2 round discount where you won't be, you need to invest as much draft capital into him.
You definitely answered one of my questions there. What round would you take him in? Because I've seen his ADP all over the place. You know, on our mock draft episode, I passed him in the 10th round because I thought he was already drafted. And then I'm doing other like PPR drafts where, you know, because of those vacated targets, his ADP is probably a bit higher, but I've seen him taken in like the 7th round there, or maybe in like late 6th, depending on, you know, what tight end off the board he is. So that's something that I'm keeping my eye on, just because I do see the opportunity there and his speed metrics as a prospect. As we've mentioned earlier on this podcast, when we were hyping up the Hurst move, he does have fewer than 50 receptions in the NFL. And maybe that's just a symptom of the situation, But I don't know if you have a rebuttal to my rebuttal, but that's the one thing that worries me about him.
It's not a rebuttal. I mean, I think I understand the concern, but he has been in the league for 2 years now. So it's not like he's a rookie tight end who we usually give several years to adjust to the NFL. Tight end is one of the toughest positions to play because you're expected to block, you're expected to catch, you're expected to do all of these things. And I think he's an older guy too. So I have no worries about the fact that he has fewer than 50 receptions at this point. He, again, was in an offense that also had Nick Boyle and Mark Andrews. So his competition was a lot greater for tight end targets. And he does not have that whatsoever in Atlanta. So it's not top of mind for me at all. Okay, so that's going to do it for today's show. We've got a little bit shorter one here today, but we've got some more positive news because Hard Knocks starts tonight. So we got to
let's go
watch that. See Hard Knocks Los Angeles. Watch some cotton swabs get put in places that nobody wants to see. But
any bingo bets on or hot takes on what's going to happen in this episode? Other than no football being played?
I honestly have no idea. We've been watching Hard Knocks for a couple of years now. This will be interesting year to watch because there is no preseason, so you don't see those games. I don't think there will be as many of the sort of edge of the roster type players that we get to see because they're just not on the roster or don't have as good of a chance to make the team.
And I was going to pose a question to you guys at the end here too. And who do you think is going to be the kind of like breakout star, not as like a popularity, but in terms of fantasy where everyone sees him and then it's like, okay, he's actually running really good routes and like, he's not getting drafted or he's at the end and like his draft position's just going to jump because he happens to get the airtime during the show.
I mean, I would say Keenan Allen, but you're already gaga for him. So I don't know. Who would get some pop? It's got to be someone with personality. I mean, I would like to see Justin Herbert a little bit more, and much more so than Tyrod Taylor.
I think if anyone, it's going to be Cam Akers. I don't know what his personality is like, but I think if enough people start to see him and coaches are talking him up, his fantasy football value is just going to get even higher because there are several people who are very high on Akers already, and if they see like, oh, he's getting some buzz in Hard Knocks, then he's gonna shoot up. He could be in the third round by the time this is over. I wouldn't be surprised.
The only person I'm hoping they really cover, and this has nothing to do with fantasy, but it would probably be Joey Bosa because he just got paid, like, with all this COVID stuff going on, he got paid a ton of money, and I think it really flew under the radar. He's like, isn't he like the second highest paid defensive player now or something?
Something like that.
It's crazy, but I know he and his family might be a unique deck of cards. So I'd love to get some insight into that.
No doubt. Well, this is going to be some great content for our listeners who are likely listening to this after Hard Knocks has aired on Tuesday night. But without further ado, thank you for joining us today for Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, for Garner at Garnther. I am Sam Hoppin at Sam Hoppin, and you can follow our podcast account at Pod After TD. And with that, the Hard Knocks kick is good. Da-da-da-da.
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 Da-da-da-da.